Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Tony D'Souza. He's the author of a book that has been published directly in paperback called Mule, a paperback original. It's a novel of moving weight. It's his third novel. Now, as many who have read Tony D'Souza's first two books may know, it's a departure. It's a novel that is about the Great Recession. Those of us who are uncertain what to call it will accept for the moment calling it the Great Recession. And what was it you discovered, Tony, in sitting down to this?
Well, this is definitely, can I just say it's an honor to be here. This book is definitely a departure from my first two. My first two were multicultural books with foreign settings, and they allowed me to explore questions of race and identity. And Mule really allows me to explore a personal experience in the sense of the last few years, what my wife and I have gone through in having our two children, and my wife was laid off from her job. And I'm a freelancer, and I live off novel advances. And freelancing for me fell off a cliff in 2008 when we were having our first child. And the recession for me has been a very frightening, difficult time. And writing Mule allowed me to put all of those emotions into fiction.
The character here, whose name is James Lassiter, his wife, who's Jamaican, has a friend she went to high school with who is a grower of drugs in Northern California. And he discovers that he could sell them and drive them around, be a mule. And this is going to allow readers to see what's inside the drug-dealing world. How far in did you have to go?
Well, I think that anyone who reads this book is going to have a really good insight into the drug trafficking, how it's done, the logistics of drug trafficking. I mean, these things are fascinating. Where did I get my information from? I lived up in Northern California since 2003 and became friends with lots and lots of these people. They knew me as a writer because of my first two books, my magazine articles. And for some of them, there's ego invested in this. The operations they put together are very complex. It's very difficult to get something from point A to point B, from a grow field in Northern California to a dorm room in the East Coast. How is that done? And these are the people doing it. They're proud of what they do. They can't talk about it to anyone else. They can't brag about it. A small business owner, a medium business owner doing very well gets into the Pacific Coast Gulf Business Review or whatever and wins prizes. But the operators of these businesses obviously don't. So there was a moment when not too many years ago when someone came up to me and they had an article from The New Yorker called Dr. Kush by a really wonderful journalist named David Samuels. And it was about that. And he said, could you do my story? So I had ins into it this way and other ways. And anything you read in this book about drug trafficking and money laundering, it's the way it is.
The other books have narrators who are so richly good-hearted, who want to do things for the world. One of them in the first novel is a volunteer for the Peace Corps. It seems as if with this book you kind of said, enough goodness.
Absolutely. I mean, this is my first American novel. My other two, one's set in Africa and one is set in India and partly in America. This is a return home for me. This is a homecoming for me, Mule. It's an American highway book, and it's a contemporary book dealing with the economy and the struggles in it that we're all going through. Is it not good-hearted? I mean, I feel like my main character loves his family. I feel like he takes big risks because he loves his family. When he watches his daughter born early in the book, that was nearly a one-to-one correlation between his experience watching his daughter born and my own. And in that scene, there's a moment where his wife is in labor about to deliver the child, and she looks up at him with a stricken face and says, "I can't do it. I can't do it." And the thought goes through his head that, you know, she's going to die and the baby's going to die. And he comes to this much deeper understanding of himself and his place in the world. And absolutely, I had that same experience. So there are things that are good-hearted about the book, generous and big. The friendships between him and the other people in the business with him, they take care of each other to the extent that they can. But this is a book about circling the wagons. And I think it's a contemporary book in that sense. And it's my family first, and it has to be right now because we're not getting by. Nothing's working. Playing by the rules is not working anymore. And not just in this book, but I think in life today.
Well, undoubtedly. It seems, though, to me that then you'd be saying that the people that you know and you have changed during this time, and people are doing things today that they wouldn't have done before.
That's very interesting. I mean, has it essentially changed who we are? I think we all absolutely have choices about how we're facing this situation. Am I going to be big-hearted and help other people? I mean, me personally, you know, I absolutely do. I was a Peace Corps volunteer, and I still do tons of altruistic things. But I think the nature of this book, my third novel, I feel like I want to be a dynamic writer, a diverse writer, and I'm exploring something different here. So this of my three characters, my three novels, James is a very conflicted hero.
It's never a simple world, right? I mean, what novelists are there for is to let us know that nothing is untainted, that we live in a complicated realm, and that the greatest novelists are the people capable of the greatest inspection of a character and seeing, you know, opposition everywhere. I'm talking to Tony D'Souza about his novel Mule, a novel about ordinary Americans who, facing the recession, discover that they can't afford things that were once luxuries, now necessities are going by the boards, and the husband finds it's possible to deal marijuana. As the book goes on, he finds himself more or less selling bits of his time and his intelligence to more and more. Well, you've got a grower and you've got a buyer, and they both have desires for more and more money, and so the mule is given more weight to carry, and this is a novel of moving weight. Now, when you came to that subtitle, were you smiling?
Yeah, a novel of moving weight. It's funny. I mean, it's a wonderful play on words. I didn't come up with it. My editor, Jenna Johnson at Houghton Mifflin, came up with it. And it was one of those moments of a sort of stroke of genius. So I've certainly had friends. I mean, this book has been a departure for me in the sense that some literary friends, are sort of arching their eyebrows and saying, "Why are you writing about drug trafficking?" And the reason I'm writing about drug trafficking is because it fascinates me. It's interesting. It's part of our culture. We have a long history of mythologizing these gangsters from the past, Capone and Pablo Escobar. We love criminal stories, and this is I love them, and I loved writing this book. So a novel of moving weight, the reason that's the tagline is because to haul drugs across the country is to move weight.
It seemed to me, though, that at the same time, a novel of moving weight might be Crime and Punishment in another world. And so I feel that, you know, you've gone from being a novelist who was putting a gamble on the greatness of the novel, and now this novel really needs to be telling the truth about our times and whether or not that truth can be told. for instance, as you got to know the world of drug trafficking, do you feel that people stopped telling you the truth because they were afraid of being exposed?
No, I feel like they told me the truth. I feel like they had a really high level of trust in me for various reasons. In fact, I know that they told me the truth. I have no doubts about that.
Why?
I had ins into this group of people. I care about them. I know their kids. I love some of them. I would never want to see anything bad happen to them. They're not perfect people. Some of them are bad people. Some of us who don't do this are bad people, too. So the level of truth here is absolutely, it's crystalline truth, I think, that I'm writing about. They told me about their lives. I know about their lives. I know about their conflicts. I spent many years with them. And in some ways, I think, while the book is entertaining and plays with reality, bends reality in ways that I didn't necessarily bend reality in my first two, it doesn't bend reality about the difficulties of these businesses that they run, how they struggle to get to the top, their amazing abilities at managing people and doing everything in the shadow of the law.
Will they be reading the book, do you think?
Yes, they will. In fact, some of them are very excited about the book. You know, they'll recognize themselves in it, and it's not every day that they can get recognition for the things they do. I mean, yes, they're criminals, okay, but they're also accomplished business people. They are risk takers. There are people who are family. They love their families. They're human beings. I mean, to think otherwise is to absolutely, you know, denigrate them. But this is what they've chosen to do, and some of them are very successful at it. Others aren't. And yes, they'll be reading the book. They've already read the book, and I think generally they're very excited.
Now, there are those of us who are wondering about how to put this America, the one we're living in right now, behind us. Some of us are in 12-step programs, are trying to unshackle ourselves from the world of addiction that some people might believe was created by the motion of capitalism when it moves too freely. And I get the sense that this is a book where a good number of the characters will end up in the meeting rooms of one anonymous meeting or another. Yeah?
Are you asking that because of the acknowledgement page? Did you read the line?
And sure. And my own concern. Yes, both.
Well, I mean, it's not something I often talk about, but I mean, I'm in a 12-step program and have been for a number of years, and so I guess, you know, there was for me a personal question: am I to write about drug dealing and drug trafficking at the same time that I've dealt with my own addiction problems? And I definitely talk to other people in the certain program I work with and work closely with, and pose that question to them. It was never a real issue. Ultimately, we all have the challenges we face in life, and there's always a fork in the road ahead of each one of us, and we can choose one path or another. So this story is not, even though it centers on drugs and things like that, it's, you know, what another person does with their life is their choice. And the reality is that there's a huge market out there for these things. I was once part of that market, a buyer, and I'm not anymore. So I still enjoy this part of the great fabric of America and our culture.
It's an interesting thing because now we have two worlds. This is outside the book. A world of dealing whose practitioners are anonymous, and a world of recovery whose members are also anonymous. Now, the American theme used to be becoming an individual and becoming famous. I'm curious about the world that is spreading anonymity on both sides of the fence?
I think it's a great question, especially right now. So I think that when you – so I take it you're in recovery program too. I mean, is that what you're implying? I don't mean to call you out or ask you. I mean
– I've been in one form of recovery or another all my life. Uh-huh. Think first day of the womb, out of the womb, I started saying, how do I heal this? You know, there's a real sense in me of the world as being a place that only novels can describe.
Well, I'm asking just because I guess a nuts and bolts sort of answer to the question. I mean, when I went through my first year of sobriety, it was, I can't describe it as anything but hell on earth. I mean, I was, you know, craving every moment of every day, and I don't know how I made it through. But right around the, I guess, 6-month mark, the craving was lifted, and I looked around me, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, it really did feel unbelievable to be free. And then I went through a period of just emotional turmoil for a while. And it really took me more than a year to get my feet on the ground. But that first year was such a level of craziness. You know, I'd lived my whole adult life on one substance or another. And so suddenly I was 34 years old and was trying to live life without any help. And I felt bananas and crazy most of the time. But one of the things I thought of at that time was, oh, I should, you know, I'm a freelance journalist, and I'm always looking for a way to tell a good story and get a paycheck and support my family. So I thought, oh, let me write about my addiction recovery story. And I started to pitch it. And then a moment of clarity came to me, and I said, you know what, I don't want to write about this. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to talk about it, but this is a very personal thing for me. It's something I'm very proud of. I'm proud of essentially three things. I mean, I'm proud of my books and my art, and I'm proud of my children, and I'm proud that I overcame this very difficult thing for me. Overcame it so far. So I think I really came to a crossroads where I don't want to talk about it in any kind of way that's going to be a profit to me. I mean, if someone listening to this, if there are writers out there, especially, you know, I wrote my first two books completely messed up. I revised them straight during the day, but I wrote them completely messed up, and it took me to such a bad place that I really, when I decided to get sober, I mean, ever writing again was not a possibility because I didn't know how, because I'd never tried. So I mean, writing Mule, it's funny, it's a drug book, and it's a highway book, it's all these different things, but essentially it's my book of survival.
I'm talking to Tony D'Souza about his new book, Mule. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. We'll continue after this short break.
I'm Connie Alvarez, producer of Bookworm. Check out our other KCRW programs in the podcast section of iTunes. Shows like DNA, Good Food, The Treatment, Unfictional, and The Business. Or listen on KCRW's smartphone apps. And thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Tony D'Souza about his new book, Mule. It's a novel that I would say tries to follow a morally inclined character into a place where morality is no longer possible. And so we're watching a character who we've thought of as being family-oriented and human into the places where many of us have gone in recent years, to a place where he's out of control. He's not a user, but he is now, by the end of the book, a dealer running drugs for powerful dealers who will destroy him or be destroyed. And it's a very interesting thing, because suddenly the most profound moral recognition in the book is that he is angry at his wife because she's allowed him to take and to continue to take these risks. What was once a kind of, I don't know, even joyful, can I do it, has become a paranoid life of hotel rooms and motel rooms and all-night driving and constant belief in being followed, of being punished, of being tried, and suddenly, in a form, I guess, of denial, he feels, why didn't she stop me? Why didn't my wife stop me if she says she loves me?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That was, this whole book was a discovery, I think. It has elements of a thriller, and I love the way the end of the book comes together. It was organic. I didn't sit down and plan it out. And to me, it just suddenly, when I was writing the end of the book, it was like turning a key and all the tumblers fell into place, and I couldn't believe how that happened. But the stuff about the wife, and there are moments where he's in those motel rooms and he's, I mean, he feels compelled to be doing what he's doing to get money for his family. I mean, they've both lost their jobs and they have one child and then another. But he lives in a constant state of fear. His beard is falling out. He fills his pocket with Lucky Charms he finds along the highway. And he talks to a little stuffed bear that's his daughter's bear. It smells like milk, and he takes it on every drive with him to keep him safe. And when he sees police, he talks to the bear. And I think it's a he lays in those motel rooms. Those motel rooms are really some of the only places he gets a sense of safety when he's out on the highway, and it's not much. And he begins to think about his relationship and his wife, and she's become, he's always on the road, so she's sort of internalized her loneliness by going into materialism, buying things and trying to join an upper strata of life. And he wonders, how can she love me if she's letting me do this? I suppose people read my books as me. Everyone asks me if they're real, all three of them. And there's elements that are real and there's elements that aren't. It's fiction, and it's in a tradition of fiction that goes to Hemingway and before Hemingway and, you know, Ray Carver and Tim O'Brien. It's art. I've worked on each one of these sentences. I've made decisions about each one of these actions that they take, for better or worse. If the book works or not, I have thought about it. And I think it's fair sometimes to say yes. I mean, this book explores my own marriage.
And what about the lives of your children, or what you hope for them?
I've been home with my children since they were born, so I've been home with my daughter since she was 3, and I write at night, my son since he was 2. And right now, for example, I'm on book tour, and I'm lucky to have a book tour, and I'm lucky people are paying attention to the book, if they are, and I feel like they are. And I've been away from home for 2 weeks, and even at home, there are plenty of days where I'm watching them, and I really wish they would just go to sleep and leave me alone, and I could get my work done. And parenting is very difficult, and at the same time, it's absolutely wonderful. I love them. I can't imagine life without them, and there's no adequate way to express that in a soundbite. But it's difficult. I'd like my own time. And, the question here for James and Kate in the book is, do they love their children? If they're willing to do this, which could potentially put him away for 30 years, so is it really about the money? What is this about? And I think, like, even the career as an artist or anything we do, I mean, I tend to be a workaholic. If the recession didn't happen and I had the money to, I would likely hire a nanny and not spend much time with my children. So it's been a blessing in that sense. It's forced me to spend time and get to know my children. I feel grateful for that.
This book is presenting a world of people who would say, honestly, I wouldn't judge this character. My life got taken away from me, too. I was a victim of the recession. If I were given the opportunity to make $10,000, every 2 weeks, I would take it up. So, you know, a kind of moral vacancy, or what would you say, suspended judgment, is what this novel depends upon. In both the culture it describes and in its reader, saying, I understand why he's doing it. And he feels that if he were to be caught, he would be able to say to a judge, I had no choice. I was trying to support my family. That's all I know how to do. That's all I've been taught to do.
Well, I mean, when I was writing the book, I was thinking a lot about the Great Depression and some of the highway novels like On the Road. And the thing about Mule is I'm proud of the book, And when I was going back and rereading some of those books, like, say, Grapes of Wrath, and I mean, mentioning these books in the same breath as Mule, I mean, I don't want to come across as trying to compare my book to those books. I have too much admiration for them. But Grapes of Wrath, if you stand away from it, away from the cultural memory of it and what it's become through, in some ways, indoctrination in the high schools and stuff like that, it is a good book. But it's also a flawed book. I mean, it has two-dimensional characters. All of them are two-dimensional. The dialogue is often stilted, and something about it works. And looking at that book again, I really realized the importance in writing is story. It will always be story. So a three-dimensional character, one, you know, richly three-dimensional, in a book that really is light on story, I think it isn't going to work. On the Road, I mean, gosh, how many criticisms can we have of On the Road? I love the book. It's too long. Not enough happens. It's, you know, all those things repetitive, and yet it captures a moment in history. So I don't know what Mule's going to do. I wrote the book I wanted to write. This is a real period of history. It will be definable, distinct, and memorable, and there are going to be many other books that try to deal with it and that will deal with it, and they will deal with it more successfully than this book. What I feel, you know, proudest about my book is that writers can be ambulance chasers. We all know that. A moment can come of, you know, 9/11 or the wars in Iraq or whatever it is, and a bunch of writers will jump on board trying to capitalize on that. And I have no guilt on my conscience about trying to capitalize on the Great Recession, because we have lived it. We have lived it as we've struggled through it like anyone else. And so I feel I had a right to write this book.
I've been talking with Connie D'Souza. He's the author, most recently, of Mule, a novel of moving weight, published by Mariner Books and Paperback as part of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you for joining me, Tony.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Mule at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download this podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.